Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser.
Y'all ready for this?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, fellow liberals and Democrats, inquisitive Republicans, and concerned citizens of all backgrounds. Welcome to Making Sense with Steve Laser, the show that breaks down the top issues in the last week in politics, strips out all the nonsense, and provides you the best analysis in political media. Welcome aboard, and let's get to work. Our top story this week is Benghazi. The Justice Department has obtained a number of sealed indictments for those suspected of participating in those attacks. Those indictments have started this whole ridiculous controversy over again. We'll talk about that, including an appearance I made on the O'Reilly Factor to discuss it. Later, I will make an announcement regarding my reaction and position on the anti-gay legislation in Russia and more. This week, we have a special edition of our trademark Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. Here's a preview. The president makes it into one of the halls this week for his press conference. Which will it be? If you want to write to me and give me your opinion of any topic I cover, write to makingsenseletters@yahoo.com, and I may just read your opinion on the air. Again, that's makingsenseletters@yahoo.com. So we'll get started right after this.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes. Florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
Have you ever played tug of war with a dog, with a blanket or a towel? As I was thinking about this segment and how Republicans behave with regard to Benghazi, that's the image that came up in my mind. I had a Doberman growing up, and contrary to the popular opinion of that breed, she was a very sweet animal. She wouldn't hurt a fly. But back then, when I was a kid, and I picked up a towel and gave her one end, she suddenly became a totally different animal. She grabbed onto that end and pulled, and she would growl aggressively, and she would go on pulling forever. And she did that thing. I don't even know the words to use to describe it. She did that thing that dogs do in that situation where she jerked her head violently from side to side as if trying to rip off a piece of that towel. I guess that's the best way to describe it, right? You can see hundreds of examples of dogs on pulling on blankets and towels on YouTube if you don't know what I'm talking about. But truth be told, I paused as I was preparing this segment to go on to YouTube and look at some of those hilarious videos of people playing tug-of-war with their dogs. But anyway, I'm convinced that if I had kept on doing it one of those times, the two of us would have, I mean, talking of the dog and I, the two of us would have died of thirst or kidney failure or one of those things that gamers die of when they play computer games for too many hours straight without a break. In fact, I noted on YouTube a few times that people had more than one dog and they convinced two dogs to play tug of war with each other with a blanket or towel. That seems to me to be a recipe for disaster, particularly if it's a strong towel that will not rip, because dogs will just do this forever. They will not give up. It's kind of like Republicans in Benghazi. Benghazi is one of those things that Republicans seem compelled to talk about, and when they start, it's just difficult to get them to stop. I mean, it doesn't matter how ridiculous their claims are. It doesn't matter how many facts that you throw in their direction to show them that they're wrong. They just can't help themselves. This past week, the Obama administration announced that they were filing charges against three men for involvement in the Benghazi attacks. Now, you would think that any American who considers themselves even mildly patriotic would applaud the prosecution of militants who attacked a U.S. mission. That did not seem to be the case with a number of conservative pundits. Charles Krauthammer, for one, seemed more interested in the timing than the prosecutions. I was on the O'Reilly Factor discussing that aspect of Benghazi with Laura Ingraham this past Wednesday. Here's a clip from that piece.
Joining us now from New York, liberal blogger and Democratic strategist Steve Laser. Okay, Steve, have at Krauthammer. You heard what he said. He floated the possibility that about 10 months after the attack, we suddenly filed charges, including against the man that we knew back in October was in that compound that night and who we think is linked to that al-Qaeda affiliate in the area, okay? So
right.
We knew who he was, Mr. Katala, and Fox News even interviewed them back in October, sat down with him. Our own correspondent did there. So it is a little interesting that it's right now that we have these charges.
Well, when you think about it, I mean, the entire timing question is ridiculous. You know, there's an investigation that has to happen before we figure out whether or not we're going to charge somebody, whether somebody's a suspect. And I think, you know, this is a situation that Republicans and Democrats should be standing together to try to get these people who attacked our country, who killed our ambassador. And, you know, this is just, you know, why would you make these accusations? It reminds me of during the Clinton administration. Every time Bill Clinton went after al-Qaeda, you had these accusations of wagging the dog and everything like that. That didn't turn out so well. I mean, we should have all supported Bill Clinton in going after al-Qaeda. I see something very similar going on here, and this is something that the effort should be supported to get these guys, to get them off the street so they can't attack us again.
Yeah, you mean Clinton?
Now, from there, Ms. Ingraham and I debated a number of facets of the recent arrests and the rest of the Benghazi history in the last 10 to 15 years of terrorism against the United States and the response of various administrations. It was a good discussion and debate and highlighted some of the things that folks on both sides of the aisle think are important. I'll have the full video on my blog by Monday evening, August 12th. There are a couple of things, though, that I want to talk about regarding that discussion and the Benghazi issue in general. Now, I'll get to the timing issue that Charles Krauthammer raised in a few minutes. But first, what's this ARB that Laura Ingraham and I kept talking about? Well, ARB stands for Accountability Review Board. It's the group that was put together by Hillary Clinton to investigate what happened in Benghazi. The full name is the State Department Accountability Review Board. Four members of the review board were selected by Secretary of State Clinton, and another was selected by the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. Ambassador Thomas Pickering served as the chairman, and Admiral Michael Mullen, a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who was selected by that post by George W. Bush, served as the vice chairman. They issued their report in December of 2012. I read the whole thing, all 39 pages. The report suggested a lot of areas for improvement and had some criticism for certain State Department officials, but a key finding is that intelligence provided no immediate specific tactical warning of the attacks. I want to say that again so that it sinks in for everybody listening. A key finding is that intelligence provided no immediate specific tactical warning of the attacks. The ARB also said in its findings that the interagency response to the attacks was timely and appropriate, but there was not enough time for armed U.S. military assets to have made a difference. So right off the bat, the report refutes any suggestion of wrongdoing by the Obama administration or the Department of State headed at that time by Hillary Clinton. Mistakes? Yes. Wrongdoing? No. Now, initially, when that report came out, Republicans tried to claim a lack of partiality on behalf of the people who comprised the ARB. But with a Republican-appointed former chair of the Joint Chiefs being the vice chair of the ARB, and several nonpartisan members of the intelligence community serving on the ARB, that claim was untenable and was promptly dropped. Now, during the segment, Laura Ingraham asked me, why wouldn't Hillary testify in front of the ARB? Which, if you have a full grasp of the history of the Benghazi issue, is an odd question, because, first of all, it was a State Department ARB. In other words, it was Hillary's ARB, and thus her investigation. Second, as I immediately shot back at Ms. Ingraham, Hillary Clinton testified twice before Congress regarding Benghazi. It's not like under the Bush administration, where you had Bush administration officials refusing to testify and citing executive privilege any time a remotely potential damaging investigation came about. Every request by Congress for appearance by Obama officials, every request for information, everything Congress asked for has been granted and given. That's pretty much the exact opposite of a cover-up. Mind you, that hasn't stopped Republicans from claiming a cover-up, but to claim a cover-up, some kind of request for information would have to be refused. That hasn't happened here. The opposite has happened. Now, one of my favorite attempts by Republicans to paint Benghazi as something nefarious is the question they like to ask, why did it take so long to classify the attack as a terrorist attack? Well, for starters, the attacks on the mission in Benghazi happened at 11:40 p.m. local time in North Africa. Earlier at 5 p.m. that evening, there were protests of 2,000 people in front of the Egyptian embassy because of the video Innocence of Muslims that had been uploaded in Arabic a few days earlier. That was on September 11th. 5 p.m., protest in front of the Egyptian embassy. 11:40 p.m., the attack on Benghazi. In the next few days, on September 13th, for instance, there were protests against the video at the U.S. embassy in Yemen. On September 14th, the U.S. consulate in Chennai was attacked, and there was an attack on the U.S. embassy in Tunis, also on the 14th. And there were several more in the next few days, again, all because of the Innocence of Muslims video. So you can understand that with the attack on Benghazi literally happening in the middle of all these other violent protests against that video, it wasn't simple to discern whether or not the attack on Benghazi was part of that or something entirely different. But that won't stop Republicans from bringing up the whole why did it take so long argument again and again. That's more dog and blanket tug of war for you. So let's talk about the suggestion by Charles Krauthammer that, quote, the timing is questionable regarding these charges being announced. Well, the charges were filed this past Tuesday, August 6th. On Wednesday, July 31st, 6 days earlier, Republicans had sent a letter to FBI Director James Comey complaining about a lack of progress in the investigation. The letter was signed by Senators Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, John McCain of Arizona, Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire, and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. On the House side, Republican Representatives Daryl Issa, the chairman of the committee leading the House Benghazi investigation, Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, Jim Jordan of Ohio, and Jason Chaffetz of Utah signed. So Republicans were exerting pressure on the FBI director to press charges against those suspects being involved. And 6 days later, the FBI director pressed charges. Mystery solved, right? Anybody who can use a search engine could have figured that out. I should point out that it wasn't just Republicans in the media making false accusations that the timing of the charges were suspicious. There were plenty of folks on the progressive left who were making the claim that the charges were suspiciously timed as well to supposedly deflect attention from the NSA scandal. See? These days, everything the president does is used as the basis for convenient conspiracy theories by both the right and the left. Who says we can't be bipartisan in this country, right? But I'm starting to get off track. Folks, when I told some of my friends that I would be covering Benghazi during the show, they said, Steve, why are you doing that? You know as well as anyone else that Benghazi is a bunch of baloney hyped up by Republicans. Why are you giving that publicity and airtime? Well, I'll tell you. We're going to be hearing about Benghazi on and off for the next 3 years and 4 months. There's no getting away from it. Republicans think that they can hurt President Obama with it, and if she runs, they think they can hurt Hillary Clinton with it. So we're stuck with this nonsense. Because of that, every Democrat out there needs to be armed with the best information possible on Benghazi. We got plenty of advanced warning. We know it's coming. It's already happening. We're going to see more of it. We know Republicans are going to use this to try to hurt our folks. Every Democrat needs to be able to recite the things that I just talked about on demand. Only when we show that we know all the facts and we can refute all the lies coming from Republicans do we have a chance of making the nonsense on Benghazi stop. What do you think? Write to me at makingsenseletters@yahoo.com and tell me if you think I'm out to lunch or if I'm right on Benghazi. We'll be right back.
We don't get fooled again.
What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze Diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, BADLER.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R. Welcome back. I have a word and personal announcement regarding the anti-gay legislation that was recently passed in Russia. As many of you know, I consider the fight for complete equality for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered community to be one of the most important civil rights issues of our time. I talk about it a lot on this show, and I often feature those who seem to be against that equality in my Hall of Shame. It's also the case that over the past 2 years or so, I have been appearing semi-regularly on various state-sponsored or state-owned Russian media, including the RT television channel, formerly known as Russia Today, and also the Voice of Russia radio network. I've enjoyed those appearances immensely. The topics raised were timely and good, and the discussions excellent. I've made a lot of friends in Russian media, and they are friends that I value greatly. Now, knowing all of those things, you can imagine the cognitive dissonance caused by the recent passage of Article 6.21 of the Code of the Russian Federation on Administrative Offenses, which is claimed by various Russian officials to only involve punishment of individuals accused of the propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations amongst minors, but is really much more wide-reaching. Here's what Article 6.21 actually says and means. Propaganda is the act of distributing information among minors that, one, is aimed at the creating non-traditional sexual attitudes, two, makes non-traditional sexual relations attractive, three, equates the social value of traditional and non-traditional sexual relations, or four, creates an interest in non-traditional sexual relations. Now, distributing information among minors has been interpreted as any expression in favor of gay rights that minors might ever see. In other words, displaying a rainbow flag in Russia in public puts you in violation of this law. Any political activities in favor of gay rights might be seen by minors, so those are against the law too. And violations result in both stiff fines and jail terms of 2 weeks for foreigners or up to 90 days for Russian citizens. Now, about this law, Russian human rights activist Lyudmila Alexeyeva called it, quote, a step toward the Middle Ages. And international rights groups have said that the current situation in Russia has become the worst human rights climate of the post-Soviet era. Now, Russia is not the only country that has issues with equality for various groups, right? Full disclosure. And we have equality problems in the United States, not only for the LGBT community, but for people of color, Asians, women, and more. Other countries have their various issues as well. But the difference is we here in the United States are generally moving in the right direction, as are most of the other countries of the world. The worst you can say is that in certain areas, we're standing still. And again, that's the same for most of the other countries of the world. That's the worst that you can say. We're not enacting new laws that greatly restrict equality for a vulnerable minority. And a country that does that needs to experience vigorous opposition and condemnation by the international community. But there's more that makes it even worse in the situation with Russia. Russia's new anti-gay law effectively prohibits gay couples from adopting children and virtually requires that children currently in the custody of gay parents be taken away from them, right? Let's look at the law. Makes non-traditional sexual relations attractive or equates the social value of traditional and non-traditional sexual relations. Well, if your parents are gay, that does tend to suggest that traditional and non-traditional sexual relations are okay or equal. Now, many of you longtime fans of the show will remember that I did a show back in April on genocide that was widely acclaimed by well-known international genocide prevention and education groups, like Genocide Watch. In preparation for that show, I really dove into how genocide happens, what are the stages, and what is classified as genocide. Now, when the Russian anti-gay law was described as taking custody of children away from gay parents, the warning sirens in my mind became unbearably loud, because one of the definitions of genocide against a people or group is forcibly transferring children of that group to another group. And you can see that definition right on Genocide Watch's homepage, webpage. Now, of course, the idea that Russia is enacting new laws against a vulnerable minority should already be enough to warn us that Russia is heading in the wrong direction in terms of what we have seen in past genocides. A state stigmatizing a particular group through law is a very bad sign. And it's a sign that has been heard loud and clear by the more extremist elements of Russian society. We've seen hate groups step up attacks on gays and lesbians in Russia since the passage of the law. Now, how can gays and lesbians fight back against those attacks by those hate groups? If they organize a protest and identify themselves as gay, they're breaking the law. If they try and organize into a political group and that group proposes legislation, they're breaking the law. I spent some time over the past few weeks discussing the situation with my friends in the LGBT community here in the United States to figure out what my response would be, if any. The time for deliberate reflection came to an abrupt stop with my most recent appearance on RT's Crosstalk show. Some of my friends in the LGBT community were clearly upset with me over that appearance, but more importantly, it's something that I simply could not justify to myself. I know that if it was one of the various minority groups to which I belong that was being singled out that way, I would want a maximum response by anyone and everyone to try to get that situation reversed. And I would particularly expect that of my friends. That's the only thing that has a hope of peacefully turning back state-sponsored discrimination. A massive and complete rejection and boycott of that state and all of its apparatus by people of conscience. With that in mind, my decision and actions are as follows. 1. In my first ever alteration to my personal rule that I will debate anyone, anytime, anywhere, on any subject, I will not accept any future requests for appearances on state-owned Russian television or radio until the anti-gay law is rescinded. And I call on all journalists and media personalities who care about LGBT equality to follow that example. 2, I call on the nations of the world to agree to the suggestion and petition by George Takei of Star Trek fame to move the 2014 Winter Olympics to Vancouver unless the anti-gay law is rescinded. 3, If the anti-gay law is not rescinded and the Olympics are not moved, it is my position that the United States should boycott the Sochi Olympics. Now, these are not decisions that I have arrived at quickly or without a lot of personal reflection. It upsets me that I know this will result in the loss of good relations with several of my friends in Russian media and may result in my permanent blacklisting among Russian media organizations. Nevertheless, I am 100% certain that these decisions are the right ones for me, and I again call on any journalists and media personalities who care about LGBT equality to similarly refuse to work with Russian state media until this anti-gay law is repealed. We'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and it's the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
This past weekend, the United States shut down nearly two dozen embassies and consulates throughout the Middle East and Southwest Asia, citing what was termed an Al-Qaeda plot. The terms of the threat were refined twice over the past week. As discussed by CBS News, first we were told that it involved a threat from Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, known as AQAP, a terrorist group CBS News correspondent Bob Orr said is, quote, the most active and charged among Al-Qaeda. Later that was expanded in a Daily Beast article that the threat came from a conference call that included the leaders or representatives of the top leadership of Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, calling in from different locations. All told, said one U.S. intelligence official, more than 20 Al-Qaeda operatives were on the call, including Ayman al-Zawahiri, the current head of Al-Qaeda, Nasser al-Wuhayshi, the head of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Nigeria's Boko Haram, the Pakistani Taliban, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, and more obscure Al-Qaeda affiliates, such as the Uzbekistan branch. Also on the call were representatives of aspiring Al-Qaeda affiliates, such as Al-Qaeda in the Sinai Peninsula. CBS's Bob Orr commented that the fear is that this may be a big play from a group that has been unable to muster a large-scale attack since 9/11, and they've got some expertise. They, speaking of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, have a bomb maker in Yemen named Ibrahim al-Asiri, and he's the guy who built the underwear bombs and printer cartridge bombs. Bob Orr describes him as a devious genius and said that we know in the past he's experimented in research trying to build body bombs, that is, implant explosives in human beings that would give whole new meaning to the term suicide bombers. Now, while the exact nature of the threat has not been disclosed, House Homeland Security Chairman Mike McCaul, a Republican congressman from Texas, said last Sunday on Face the Nation, quote, we're on a high state of alert. I think the administration's call to close these embassies was actually a very, very smart call, particularly in light of what happened in Benghazi, when warnings were not heeded in that case. I'm glad to see that in this case, they're taking this very seriously. So that's the determination of a Republican who has seen and heard the specifics of the threat. Of course, as with the Benghazi arrests, there are those on both the political left and right who have levied charges against the administration that the timing of these threats is suspicious. Basically, wag the dog charges and all of that nonsense. Perhaps President Obama should call up Nasser al-Wuhayshi and say, "Hey, Nasser, can you guys over at al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula wait to make threats against the United States, at least until a time when there is nothing else going on politically, so that it can't possibly be interpreted as a distraction?" Now, obviously, I'm being sarcastic, right? These distraction charges have become the easiest accusations to make when you've got nothing else in your mind's arsenal. In other words, if you're dumb and unimaginative. I wonder if FDR experienced this in the 1940s, if he ever faced these kinds of charges and accusations. I wonder if he ever had any political scandals going on at the same time that any of these major battles happened in the Second World War. I wonder if anybody ever said to him, "Hey, Franklin, nice dodge on the economy. Sure you intended to invade Guadalcanal that day." Or, "Nice distraction with that Doolittle raid, Mr. President. That raid didn't do much damage to Japan, so it had to be a distraction from whatever it was that was going on." But I digress. What people should know is that the reaction of the Obama administration to this latest threat, and that is the shutdown of the embassies and missions, that kind of stuff comes right out of the recommendations from the Accountability Review Board and other groups who were tasked with finding out what mistakes were made in the Benghazi incident. Again, mistakes, not wrongdoing. So while Benghazi was a tragedy, those who died there did not die in vain if the right lessons were learned. And here we're seeing that it seems that they were. We'll be right back with our Hall of Fame and Shame after this. What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze Diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, BADLER.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R. And now it's time for our weekly Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. First, our Hall of Fame for making sense. Winning the Hall of Fame this week for making great sense is President Barack Obama. The president had a press conference on Friday, August 9th, and answered questions on a host of different topics. But it's 3 of his responses that win him the Hall of Fame this week. First, in a response to a question from the AP regarding whether the relationship with Russia has gotten worse since Putin took office, and talks about Snowden's involvement in all of that, and the president had this in response.
"I think there's always been some tension in the U.S.-Russian relationship after the fall of the Soviet Union. There's been cooperation in some areas. There's been competition in others. It is true that in my years, in working with President Medvedev, we made a lot of progress. We got START done, START 2 done. We were able to cooperate together on Iran sanctions. They provided us help in terms of supplying our troops in Afghanistan. We were able to get Russia into the WTO, which is not just good for Russia, it's good for our companies and businesses because they're more likely then to follow international norms and rules. So a lot of good work that has been done and that is going to continue to be done. What's also true is that when President Putin, who was prime minister when Medvedev was president, came back into power, I think we saw more rhetoric on the Russian side that was anti-American, that played into some of the old stereotypes about the Cold War contest between the United States and Russia. And I've encouraged Mr. Putin to think forward as opposed to backwards on those issues with mixed success.
Now, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot in the last week or two. It really seems like the problem is Putin. Putin seems to delight in opposing just about everything the United States wants to do. Now, I can understand disagreements on a few issues. I've disagreed with the president on a few issues, like Syria, right? But when it's almost everything, I have to wonder, is this all just because Putin was former KGB in the Soviet Union and he can't get past the idea that the United States is the enemy? Is there something that happened when he was in the KGB for which he's holding a grudge? I mean, I'm starting to get to the point where I think that the United States should just put a permanent hold on U.S.-Russian relations until Putin's gone. And that was even before Putin put the anti-gay law into effect. Now, obviously, as you can tell from what I said earlier, that just takes the problems that we have with Putin and Russia to a whole new place. Now, later in the press conference, the president was then asked a question about whether his position had evolved on surveillance issues and talked about the public trust regarding his positions on surveillance. Let's listen.
I think it's important to say, Carol, first of all, I haven't evolved in my assessment of the actual programs. I consistently have said that when I came into office, I evaluated them. Some of these programs I had been critical of when I was in the Senate. When I looked through specifically what was being done, my determination was that the two programs in particular that have been at issue, 215 and 702, offered valuable intelligence that helps us protect the American people, and they're worth preserving. What we also saw was that some bolts needed to be tightened up on some of the programs. So we initiated some additional oversight, reforms, compliance officers, audits, and so forth. And if you look at the reports, even the disclosures that Mr. Snowden's put forward, all the stories that have been written, what you're not reading about is the government actually abusing these programs and you know, listening in on people's phone calls or inappropriately reading people's emails. What you're hearing about is the prospect that these could be abused. Now, part of the reason they're not abused is because these checks are in place. And those abuses would be against the law and would be against the orders of the FISC.
Now, there are a couple of important points there. First, no, the president's position hasn't changed on surveillance issues. But more importantly, the allegations made by Snowden, and they're just allegations, don't indicate that the government is listening to phone calls or reading emails. The allegations are that the government could do that. And frankly, there's no way to prevent that possibility. There are hackers out there that could do that too. That's a matter of technology. The difference with the government is, as I have been saying all along, there are checks and balances with the government. There's the FISA court, or the FISC, as the president referred to it, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. There are the two congressional committees that have the right to look at the warrants and data produced. There are checks and balances by the judicial branch and legislative branch on what the executive branch is doing. Folks, this country was created on the idea of checks and balances. If that suddenly is not enough, then an entirely new kind of government has to be thought up. I have no idea what that would be. Because ultimately, decisions have to be made and carried out, and those things will be done by people. Any expert on white-collar crime will tell you that the way you prevent any kind of white-collar crime is to make it so that multiple people have to approve sensitive decisions and transactions, and you also have multiple people with oversight over those decisions and transactions. That's what we have here. This goes to what I talked about last week. When you have leaks that raise issues in a non-deliberate and non-thoughtful way, it breeds hysteria. Suddenly people are asserting that three separate groups, the FISA court, the House Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, all those three groups having oversight, it seems not enough to people. That's nonsense. Anyone asserting that should not be thought of as credible. Finally, the president fielded a question from a right-wing reporter about progress in the criminal investigation regarding what happened in Benghazi.
I want to ask you about two important dates. October 1st, you got to implement your signature health care law. You recently decided on your own to delay a key part of that. And I wonder, if you pick and choose what parts of the law to implement, couldn't your successor down the road pick and choose whether they'll implement your law and keep it in place? And on September 11th, we'll have the first anniversary of Benghazi. And you said on September 12th, make no mistake, we'll bring to justice the killers who attacked our people.
Yeah.
11 months later, where are they, sir?
Well, I also said that we'd get bin Laden, and I didn't get him in 11 months. So we have informed, I think, the public that there's a sealed indictment. It's sealed for a reason. But we are intent on capturing those who carried out this attack. And we're going to stay on it until we get them.
And you're close to having suspect.
The response from the president regarding bin Laden was absolutely brilliant. What's any Republican going to say to that? George W. Bush didn't get bin Laden in 7.5 years. President Obama got him in 2 years and 4 months after being sworn in. So this was a great press conference for the president. Some of my friends on the conservative side of the media have been complaining that the president wasn't having enough press conferences. All I have to say to them is, be careful what you wish for. Congratulations to President Obama for winning this week's Hall of Fame for making great sense. Now we have our Hall of Shame this week for those politicians and prominent individuals who made shameful nonsense.
All aboard!
In third place this week in our Hall of Shame, we have Tim Armstrong, CEO of America Online. It's John Emmerich Edward Dahlberg Acton, 1st Baron Acton, more commonly simply referred to as Lord Acton, who is famous for the phrase, "Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." I think we all hope that when people are given power, whether in politics or business or any other sphere, that they only exercise that power with thought and care and for positive things. It's bad enough when we think that someone has used power and authority that they might have in a heavy-handed way. But if that use of power is also done in a quick and seemingly thoughtless way, it seems particularly ugly. Last week, AOL CEO Tim Armstrong held a meeting to discuss upcoming layoffs at a recently purchased firm called Patch. Over 1,000 Patch employees attended, many via conference call. At that meeting was Abel Lentz, Patch's creative director. Now, Mr. Lentz was well known for bringing a camera to meetings, taking pictures of folks giving presentations, and also taking pictures of folks in attendance and posting those pictures on the firm's internet. That's sort of a nice and fun thing that he did for employees on an ongoing basis. Those photos were not made public. Again, they were on the firm's internal intranet for internal firm use only. When he pulled out his camera during the meeting, Mr. Armstrong turned to Mr. Lentz and said, quote, "Abel, put that camera down. You're fired. Out." That's all the thought that was put into depriving someone of their employment. After going on with the meeting for 5 minutes as if nothing happened, The Atlantic reports that Mr. Armstrong suddenly returned to the topic of Mr. Lentz and said, quote, "And the reason I fired Abel before was I don't want anyone taking pictures of this meeting," end quote. He then apparently invoked some kind of comparison to a sports team's locker room. All Mr. Armstrong had to do was say to Mr. Lentz, "Please put that camera away. We won't have any photos for this meeting." Then he could have had a discussion with Mr. Lenz later and found out that Mr. Lenz takes these photos all the time for the enjoyment of the staff, for the environment at the workplace. There's no malice behind Mr. Lenz's taking of these photos. Now, I don't know Mr. Armstrong or his reputation. I don't know if this is an unusual incident or if he's one of those detestable CEOs that tends to do these kinds of instantaneous firings. Unfortunately, there are people out there like that. But regardless, firing someone with all of the thought and care that most folks use when deciding between one scoop and two scoops at the ice cream parlor is a detestable act, and it wins Mr. Armstrong third place this week in our Hall of Shame for worst nonsense of the week. In second place for even worse nonsense this week, we have Kathy Adams, former chairperson of the Texas Republican Party. The Huffington Post's Nick Wing reports that Ms. Adams, who served as chairperson of the Republican Party for a year between 2009 and 2010, was discussing immigration reform with Christian radio host Rick Wiles last week when they went well into nonsense territory. Let's listen.
We have about 50,000 other than Mexicans who crossed our border within 1 year. Those people that were apprehended were from countries like Indonesia. Of course, that's an Islamic, just very fierce fighting Islamic government. We have Pakistanis coming across, people from the Philippines, Somalia, Tunisia, Uzbekistan. We also have this issue of visas. And we've lost, I think, the latest nonsense I saw from the Homeland Security Department was something like a million people that have come here on visas that we have no idea where they are.
Do you know where they're taking us with this? Because they said the solution to all these lost foreigners in the country, the solution is biometric scanning. That's where they're taking us, Kathy.
Yeah. Well, and I do understand that. I've seen it. I've heard it. And, of course, we know in biblical prophecy that that is the end time. That is going to be the brand either on our foreheads or on the back of our hands. That is demonic through and through. That is end times prophecy. There is no question about that.
Wow. Somehow, Kathy Adams went from immigration reform right to demons and Satan.
Well, isn't that special?
Thank you, Church Chat Lady. Yes, that is special, isn't it? Undocumented immigrants will lead to the end times and the apocalypse. This is who Republicans down in Texas voted to be the chair of their party. You can see how they ended up with geniuses like George W. Bush and Rick Perry as governors down there. I still don't know how they got from immigration reform to Armageddon with virtually no segue. How does that happen? And more importantly, how does it happen with someone who led one of the two major parties in one of America's largest states? Fellow Latinos, you heard her say it. They so badly don't want any kind of fairness shown to undocumented immigrants that they are conflating a path to citizenship with demons, Satan, and causing the apocalypse and Armageddon. That's just crazy stuff. Kathy Adams, former chairperson of the Texas Republican Party, is runner-up this week in our Hall of Shame for infamous nonsense. But the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week goes to Republican National Committee Chair Rents Priebus, or as the consonants in his name would suggest, RNCPRBS. Yes, those really are the consonants in his name in order. Mr. Priebus is up in arms over two Hillary Clinton biopics that are supposedly going to come out in the next year or two, one on CNN and one on NBC. Yahoo News reports that Priebus accused both networks of being, quote, Hillary Clinton campaign operatives in producing the projects. In a letter to CNN's Jeff Zucker, Priebus wrote that, quote, your credibility as a supposedly unbiased news network will most certainly be jeopardized by the decision to show political favoritism and to produce an extended commercial for Secretary Clinton's nascent campaign, end quote. Mr. Priebus then threatened to not allow CNN and MSNBC and to remove them as co-sponsors of any Republican presidential debates in 2016 if they proceed with airing the biopics. So CNN and MSNBC can't do a biopic on one of the most prominent politicians of our time. Right. In response, CNN said that the Republican National Committee are making, quote, premature decisions about CNN Films' upcoming Hillary Clinton documentary. The cable news network says that the GOP body is also performing the ultimate disservice to voters in threatening to pull out of debates that the network either sponsors or partners on. Now, Priebus was on the Hannity show last week discussing this. Here's some of what he had to say.
I mean, the fact of the matter is you've got two networks that are potentially spending millions of dollars promoting a person that they know is at least doing the dance and getting ready for a run for president. And I think it's just about a time that our party stands up and protects the party and our candidates from networks that are not in the business of promoting our party. They're not in the business of promoting our candidates. They're not in the business of doing anything but promoting the Democratic Party. And they push these candidates into positions in ridiculous hypotheticals that are never going to be reality. All they do is have a slice and dice each other for an entire year. And my point is this, you know, we have to control the referees that we're bringing into our playground. And right now, I can't trust two organizations that are willing to spend millions of their own dollars in promoting a candidate that they know is gearing up to run for president.
Rince, quit your whining. Come on, what's the matter? This is capitalism, right? This is the free market at work. This is what you talk about being so great. Hillary Clinton's very popular. People like her and are interested in her. They want to know more about her. CNN and NBC are banking that this will mean that consumers will want to consume their product if they make it. It's capitalism. It's the free market. It doesn't get any more laissez-faire capitalist than that. Why aren't we letting the market decide, Rince? Here's the thing. Public threats like these are silly. If Priebus really had a concern and wasn't just posturing, he could have sent a private email to CNN and NBC letting them know of his concern, and then he could take action as he saw fit after that. I mean, that's not what he did. Now CNN and NBC have no choice but to go ahead with the Hillary biopics. They certainly can't be seen to have knuckled under to any political party's opinion of how they should operate. They got to do it now. I don't think that's Priebus' goal here anyway, despite what he says about it. I think this is about a concept known in sports as working the refs. You give the refs a hard time, you complain about missed calls, and hope you get into the refs' head and make them look out to make doubly sure they aren't being unfair to you on every single call. Except, often when that happens, the effect is that the team working the refs gets the refs to make calls unjustifiably favorable to them. It's human nature for referees to do that. In this case, Priebus is already working the refs in advance of 2016. It's one thing to do that in a sports game, right? It's another to do it in politics. And whining about it at the same time just makes it that much worse. Rince Priebus, chairman of the Republican National Committee, wins the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week. That's all I have for today's show. Thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio this Sunday, August 18th, and Monday, August 19th at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio 1050 a.m. in Inland Empire, California. Be sure to follow me and the show on Twitter at Stephen Laser, on Facebook at Making Sense with Steve Laser, and on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. Until next time, have a great rest of your day and a great week.